We'll hear argument now in the case of Isha against Gonzalez.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Justin Burton, and I'm here on behalf of Ali Aisha in a petition for review of a Board of Immigration Appeals decision. The sole issue on review is to determine whether, in fact, Mr. Aisha was convicted of an aggravated felony under the Immigration Act. We argue that the Board of Immigration Appeals erred in making the determination that it was an aggravated felony by looking past the statute and the record of conviction to determine the facts, the underlying facts in criminal proceedings. This court, among other courts, including the United States Supreme Court, have all agreed that we should take a categorical approach in determining whether a certain offense is an aggravated felony under the Immigration Act. By looking at the categorical approach, we look at the elements of the offense to determine if the United States government can prove up their burden in showing that this is an aggravated felony. We only deviate from the categorical approach where the statute and the record of conviction is ambiguous and vague. In this case, we don't believe it is. Although it is the divisible statute which he is convicted under, the record of conviction notes that it was for the nature of the offense was for under 2313A, which is whoever receives, possesses, or conceals, stores, barters, and sells stolen property. It was clarified that this was the nature of the offense because an earlier order mistakenly put that it was defrauding the United States government, and it took a motion by criminal defense counsel to come forward and correct the error made by the criminal courts in the nature of the offense in showing that it was actually a theft offense and not a fraud offense. The goal of determining what an aggravated felony is under this grounds is not what the person or the alien actually did, but rather what the statute indicates and the elements of the statute.
Isn't the problem here that the loss amount is not an element of the offense to which he pled? And so it makes sense that the BIA would look at the plea agreement to determine whether it was a loss of more than $10,000.
The loss only comes into consideration when you're trying to determine, if there's a determination that it's fraud, then we only look to the loss element. If it's a theft offense, it makes no bearing on what the loss to the victim was. Theft offense is an aggravated felony under the Immigration Act only when somebody is incarcerated for a year longer. In this case, since he wasn't incarcerated for a year longer, it couldn't be used as substantiated grounds for aggravated felonies under the Immigration Act. The only way that they would be able to look past the record of conviction in the statute to look at the loss amount is, again, if there's a fraud as an element of the statute. And I think this court
That's
noted...
That's why I'm lost. In take burglary, the subject of the Taylor case, the Supreme Court said if the state has a generic burglary statute, statute that makes it a crime to enter a building with intent to commit a felony. Some of those entries will be of dwellings, and therefore they'll be burglary for federal purposes. Some won't. Supreme Court said in Taylor you could look to the charging papers and the plea colloquy to see whether the defendant entered a dwelling as opposed to a retail store. Is this any different from that? I notice that your brief doesn't cite either Taylor or Shepard, the most recent iteration in the Supreme Court, which said that you could look for the purpose of disambiguating when the underlying statute is in and out depending on the particulars.
Well, I think it is distinguishable where those both of those cases dealt with sentence enhancement, not the Immigration Act. The Immigration Act is a different animal to determine whether something is an aggravated felony.
I don't understand why that's important.
Well, it's important because if we're looking behind the record of conviction, we need to look towards the specific, well, in this case, the Immigration Act, to see if the term fits what the definition of an aggravated felony is. In those offenses, in the burglary cases, we dealt with state convictions in both Shepard and Taylor. The Taylor court specifically looked to whether it was a generic definition of burglary, and if it was a generic definition of burglary, it would be used for the sentence enhancement purposes. In our case, we don't need to look past the record of conviction if we can show that fraud was not an element for the conviction of the offense. And where fraud...
That's what I don't understand. Suppose you have a state statute which makes it a crime to enter a building with intent to commit a felony therein. It is not an element of that state crime whether the building is a dwelling as opposed to a retail establishment or a warehouse or something like that. The Supreme Court nonetheless said that you can look to the charging papers to see whether the defendant entered a dwelling as opposed to a warehouse. Right? So the fact that the amount of the fraud is not an element of the 371 offense doesn't distinguish this from Taylor and Shepard.
Well, even if we were to look past it to see what elements were at issue here...
That's the whole point of why I'm bringing up Taylor. It says it doesn't depend on what is an element in the underlying offense. If the offense can be committed in a way that both is within and without the federal statute.
Right. Looking at your explanation under Taylor, we also have to look at what Leocal said, which is also a United States Supreme Court decision, which dealt with aggravated felonies in the context of DUI. And in that, they only looked at the elements of the conviction. Yes, Taylor said you can look past it, but at least Leocal, which stands for the immigration, what looks towards an aggravated felony under the Immigration Act, said, quite frankly, you can't look past the elements of the conviction. Mm-hmm. So when we're looking at two cases juxtaposed against one another, one dealing with burglary under sentence enhancement and one dealing with aggravated felony definitions under the Immigration Act, I think Leocal would take precedent over a sentence enhancement case where we don't look behind the statute, where we don't look behind the conviction. In the burglary context, I think there are safeguards in the system to make sure that there were actually enhancing sentences where there is risk of harm, where you're breaking into a dwelling as opposed to a commercial setting. I think it's pretty clear by the recent case in Abdelkader versus Gonzalez, where, again, we're looking to the actual conviction and we're not looking to what he did. And I think this court reiterated the elements approach as opposed to the approach in looking behind or at the facts of the case. Even looking at the facts of the case, in this case, we're trying to not determine what he did, but what he was convicted of. And what he was convicted of, even looking at the motion to clarify the judgment, I think it even indicates that he was convicted of stealing or possessing automobiles and garaging them as opposed to fraud. Even looking at the record of proceedings, it shows that he had no knowledge or knowledge after the fact that the people that were involved in this scheme were apparently kiting checks to obtain property or possession of these cars, and he had no knowledge of that until after the fact. Thank you, Your Honors. I'll reserve.
Thank you, Mr. Burton. Ms. Vanderstar.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Thankful Vanderstar. I represent the Attorney General in this matter. Your Honors, the issue before this Court is whether petitioner's conviction constitutes an aggravated felony. Petitioner was convicted of conspiracy, number one, to defraud financial institutions, and number two, to conceal and possess and sell stolen motor vehicles. And the reason that we know this is by reference to the amended judgment in the criminal case, where it states that the defendant pleads guilty to count one of the superseding indictment. And then when we look at the superseding indictment, we see it includes a charge of defrauding financial institutions under Section 1344 of the United States Code. So actually, this is fairly simple for this court. The petitioner relies on the fact that the amended judgment in a criminal case only states as the nature of the offense the conspiracy to transport, receive, possess, etc., stolen motor vehicles. But by looking at all of the documents which this court is permitted to look at under Taylor and other cases, this court can look at the superseding indictment, at the plea agreement, and at the judgment. And when you look at all of these documents combined, it can't be disputed that the petitioner was convicted of defrauding financial institutions. And therefore, it can't be disputed that his conviction meets the definition of aggravated felony under the INA, that being fraud or deceit, where the loss to the victim or victims exceeds $10,000. The petitioner conceded that the loss was $200,000 here. So that's not at issue. Now, petitioner made a point about the conspiracy element of his conviction. The language under which he was convicted states, if two or more persons conspire either to commit any offense against the United States or to defraud the United States, shall be fined or imprisoned under this section. Now, the original judgment of conviction stated that the nature of the offense was defrauding the United States, and that clearly was not accurate. That was a clerical error, so the amended judgment was entered. Petitioner made a point in his brief of stating, well, look, I wasn't convicted for conspiracy to defraud the United States. I was convicted under the conspiracy to commit any offense against the United States. And because that's not fraud, it's not an aggravated felony. However, any offense against the United States means any federal offense. And certainly that portion of the statute is divisible. In other words, the court must look beyond the language of the statute and the judgment of conviction to determine exactly what the petitioner was convicted of. And what the petitioner was convicted of was conspiracy to defraud financial institutions and conspiracy to possess, conceal, and sell stolen motor vehicles. If you look at the plea agreement, you see that the other parties to this conspiracy deposited fraudulent checks into bank accounts and then used those bank accounts to purchase these vehicles, and then those vehicles were then moved around and concealed, and eventually an attempt was made to sell them. And the parties involved, including the petitioner here, knew very well that these vehicles were obtained in this way, from bank accounts that were created with fraudulent cashier's checks. Because there can be no dispute that the petitioner was convicted of conspiracy to defraud a financial institution, as well as conceal, possess, and sell stolen motor vehicles, there can be no dispute that the petitioner was convicted of a crime involving fraud or deceit in excess of $10,000. And therefore, his conviction constitutes an aggravated felony under the INA, and he is removable therefore. Once this court reaches that conclusion, the only conclusion left for this court is to dismiss the case for lack of jurisdiction under the jurisdictional provisions of the INA and as amended by the Real ID Act. If the court has no questions, I'd ask the court to affirm the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals that the conviction constitutes an aggravated felony and to dismiss the case.
This doesn't have anything to do with the facts in this case or the issues before us, but what happens to this guy if he is sent back to Jordan? Now, if his wife is a permanent resident of the United States, he has four children who were born here, In the future, is there a way he can get back in?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure whether... I think he was not given voluntary departure. I think he's not eligible for voluntary departure because he's an aggravated felon. Therefore, he will be subject to whatever constraints there are.
I'm just asking what they are. I mean, this conviction was 7 years ago. He's been here all this time. I'm just curious about how the system works. When he gets back, assuming if this is affirmed here and the petition for review is denied and he goes back to Jordan, is there any way he can get back into the United States legally?
I believe that he will have to wait a period of, I'm not sure exactly what it is, something along the lines of 5 to 10 years. There may be a provision where he can apply to the Attorney General for a waiver of that bar to reentry for that period of time, which I believe is discretionary. I think the equities, including his wife and children and whatever other equities he has here in the community in the United States, would factor into that. I'm not sure beyond that what he is.
Okay, I just was curious about where things go from here, if anywhere.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Burton, anything further?
Maybe I can answer your question because the gravity of what's at stake here is pretty severe. If somebody's deported from the United States as an aggravated felony, they're barred indefinitely from coming back into the United States ever. Despite him having 8 children, 4 of which are United States citizens, despite having a United States citizen wife, despite him having property and business here, he's not coming back into the United States. So the question is, we point back to, do the elements of the offense meet the definition of an aggravated felony under the Immigration Act? And that's certainly an issue. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Counsel. The case is taken under advisement. We'll hear argument now.